Ok, siamo qui per Fucina Muta con Peter Zelenka che ha presentato al Trieste Film Festival Karamazovi, una rilettura attualizzata del romanzo di Dostoevsky. Welcome, I would like to investigate first of all the heart of the movie, so the relation with the actors, because I enjoyed, of course, them so much because I think they are really, really great, but as well the way to look at them was very nice, and it's clear that it comes from somebody that know them very well. So the first part of the question is about them. How did you find them? How was your relation with them? And the second part is about your way to look at them, because there are some moments like when they are taking their roles in the real life, or when they are like changing the text according to what is happening around. There is some very deep connection, so I would like to investigate about that.
Well, these actors come from most of the actors in this film come from one theater group that was formed about 9 years ago, 8, 9 years ago, in a very small theater at the outskirts of Prague. The theater is really tiny. It's got like 120 seats, but it's very important because very good actors are coming from this theater. So far, the main actor Ivan Trojan is sort of a star in Czech Republic, but I expect others to become stars as well because they're so good. Apart from being good, there's a lot of collective feeling among these actors. You know, they used to discuss the text together. They used to create together, you know, so it really is a group. You know, there's a collective thought, collective feeling among them. And well, what I think about actors is I think it's they're irresponsible little children, you know. And I started working for theater in 2001, I was fascinated by the transformation of these irresponsible human beings into something beautiful, you know. Because in the film, the transformation is not so strong. In the film, there are fragmented moments, shots, you know, and the actors don't bring with them the responsibility for the whole piece. They act only in one shot. They're not responsible for the space, they're not responsible for the rhythm, and they're not responsible for the overall product. But in theater, they're responsible for everything within these 2 hours of a stage play, or 3 hours. They're really their own masters, you know, and they transform in a fascinating way, you know, like an actor coming from backstage, being a normal person, making a telephone call to somebody, da-da-da. And then the second he changes into the character and comes on stage and acts Dostoevsky or Chekhov or whatever, you know. So I'm still fascinated by this change.
One topic I would like also to investigate so much is your work about the text, because you told us that you were fascinating because this was already something done for the theater. I mean, the relation between the Dostoevsky novel and your movie, the link in the between is relating with theater, but I would like to understand how did you work on the text and what was your kind of interaction with this, referring to the movie?
Well, there are many dramatizations of Brothers Karamazovs in the world, and in Czech Republic alone, I know 4 or 5 dramatizations of the text. And I've chosen this dramatization, which was written by Ewald Schorm, another Czech filmmaker in the 70s. He died in 1989, and that was a guy who was not allowed to work for cinema because it was because the communists wouldn't let him. He wasn't very popular with the communist regime, but they let him work in the theater. And so during the 70s, he wrote a couple of really fantastic adaptations of some novels for the theater, and he himself directed these theaters as well, theater pieces as well. And in this little theater I'm talking about, they've chosen his dramatization, and I thought that was a very good idea, you know. So there's Dostoevsky, there's a dramatization by Shorm. Of course, it was directed by somebody else, not me. And this theater piece, and I changed it into the film. And I did a lot of changes in that, you know. I cut it down, I swapped scenes around, I added some characters to it, you know, so eventually it's not even Eval Shorm. It's a mixture of everything, you know. But I felt I can do that, you know, as long as I feel some passion to Dostoevsky. I didn't have much respect for him, you know, in terms of we have to keep it this way or that way. I think it's been over 130 years since he's dead, you know, and I thought he would be fine, you know, Dostoevsky, with whatever we do. I also believe he's not only a Russian writer, I believe he's an international writer, and he belongs to everybody, you know. I think or trust that everybody can go and try to do something with Dostoevsky, because it's I believe we can do that, you know.
Was there some principle that you were following working on the text, or it was just your feelings? I mean, for the changes, you wanted to get some result in particular, or it was just a work in progress day by day?
Well, the dramatization itself is focused on the family of old Karamazov, him and four sons, and I wanted to keep it like that. And we got rid of the religious themes. You know, you don't have all these religious layers of the book. It's not there, you know, because it's impossible to do it on film. Unless you're Andrei Tarkovsky or somebody like that, you don't know how to do it, you know. So we kept it very simple, it's like sons coming to his father, you know, discussing money, you know. And we tried, even in the editing room, we tried to make it as understandable as possible, which is very difficult with Dostoevsky, because you have a lot of these complicated names, then the relationships are pretty complicated, you know, and then the money issues are really not well solved even by Dostoevsky, because it doesn't add up, you know, when you start looking in the details, you know, it doesn't work really, you know. But it was funny when we recorded the music in the United States with Jan Kaczmarek. He was describing the story to the musicians, just to tell them roughly what the film is about, because many of them didn't read Dostoevsky, you know, nothing about it. He said, you know, this is a simple story. It's about two brothers being in love with one woman, but also the other woman, you know, is in love with the father and the son, you know, so she's fucking both son and the father, and the other son is in love with two women, you know. And they started going like that in very simple sentences, you know. And actually it is a story about two women being in love with one person. At the same time, one of these women is in love with his father, you know, so you can describe it as a simple triangle or whatever.
You mentioned two things, the music and the rhythm, that attracts my attention also, because me personally, I felt really involved in the rhythm of the movie. It was catching you, it was really take you inside. So I think there was a big attention in the music, in the rhythm, in the editing probably. So I think it's not even that easy, because it's like a theatrical operation, but done in the cinema. So I would like to understand how you work on it, and how was the interaction, and how you worked again to get these results.
Well, my main question was how far you can go from the theater play, and for how long to be able to get back to it, you know, because you're actually showing the stage play, the theater play, with some stories around it, right? And the main question was, I thought if you leave the play for a long time, it's impossible to come back to it again, you know. So I thought everything that's going on around the play, that's not the play itself, should be very condensed, very short, and very simple, you know. So that's why I've chosen the story that's around the play. It's a very simple, it's a very straightforward Greek tragedy. It's a the son dies and the father commits suicide, right? That's a very, very simple, and you don't have to have many words to describe that, you know. And actually, there are not many words, you know. And you see it in little fragments, and immediately you go back to the play. So I thought we needed something like that, so that we don't interrupt the play itself for long. Because, of course, the reality around the play is much more real. And if you follow the reality around for longer, it's very difficult to get back to Dostoevsky, you know. So I think I was trying to balance the play and the fiction, you know, and leaving very little space for this fiction.
We already spoke about during the conference, but I would like to come back also to the location, because we really can't let. It's amazing. It's very, very interesting, the interaction between the actors and the public, but also the place in itself. It's interesting by the aesthetical point of view, but also by the social and historical point of view, because you translate in the place, you get a lot of input from what they are saying, also mentioning historical happenings relating with the place. So just your general impression and a spot about this.
Well, the factory here has a couple of meanings on the ideological level. It's supposed to be a place without God, right? Because it's a working class place. It's a place where God is not, where God is absent. And this was this is the history of the place of Nová Huta, where Stalin built this place to overpower the intellectuals of Krakow. You know. He was wrong, because Polish workers are very religious, so this scheme didn't work. But the idea of a factory, like being juxtaposed to church, is something that comes in mind, you know. At the same time, the factories have wonderful aesthetical value, you know, especially these old factories. It's architecture, it's art, you know. It's beautiful. Some of these old factories are already as a UNESCO heritage, you know. Not many of them, but they're starting realizing it, that they should be kept preserved, just like old buildings, you know. And so this is another aspect, you know. And also, we needed to have something very real, you know, because a theater stage is something very abstract, you know. You have a platform and you have a table and three chairs, right? And it's very abstract. It can be anywhere. And in theater, actually, it is abstract. And I wanted to have something as real as possible around it, you know. And the factory is real, you know. Everything there is so heavy, and you can see that the things are heavy, you know. was funny. When we wanted to move some of the machinery, and we realized it weighs a couple of tons. You know, it's so everything there was so heavy we couldn't even move it, or we needed 20 people to move a simple thing around because everything's made of metal. Everything is heavy and real, you know. And that's the contrast also, because you showing some fiction and at the same time the machinery there is real existing heavy stuff.
It's very interesting also the interaction between the actors and the space, because they are moving all the time. I mean, there is not really a stage. I mean, there is one, but they are playing all the time everywhere. So it's also from this point of view, it's very involving. So is this something that happened for this movie, or it's related also with this theater group that you mentioned before?
No. The theater group performs in a very small theater on a stage that's 4 by 5 meters, very small. So we did that choreography especially for the movie. We spent 10 days before the shooting rehearsing on the spot, 12 hours a day, rearranging the scenes especially for the factory. And I was actually rewriting the script according to locations, because we thought originally it would be a different factory. So when we discovered this factory, I rewrote the script actually to fit the different places in the factory.
How long did you take to complete this movie for the Saturn?
Well, the first idea came in 2006, the beginning of 2006. It was all simultaneous. We started like looking for money, and I started rewriting the text. And immediately in the end of 2006, I started searching for the locations. So it took me more than half a year to look for the location. As the location possibilities changed, I also changed the script. So it wasn't just changing the script from the dramatical point of view, but also from the point of view of location, which was very interesting. I've never done that before.
It's very, very strange also to observe the public there. You mentioned that you had the idea in a previous set for another movie, because there were some public not expected. And I think it's interesting from two points of view. The first one is, of course, because there are some real people looking at what you're doing, so not connected directly with the cast, I mean. And the second one, because it's really great thinking about the actor, because they are playing with a real public. I mean, in the theater, when you play, you have the public there. So also in this situation, maybe you can get more from them with somebody there. I mean, this is what I thought. So.
Well, the extras we had, they made it sort of real, yes, because the question was, of course, the real question among the actors is how loud should we play it, you know? Should it be so loud that these people over there can actually hear us, or is it stylized and we speak silently and then you somehow mix it with the sound? And we decided after rehearsals in that factory, to play it as loud as possible, to sort of fight the whole space, so that they would be actually heard at the far end of the hall, you know? Except for some intimate scenes, of course. And I think it was a good choice, because they felt, the actors felt that would be right, and they have good feelings about it, you know? They knew what they were doing.
Also about the relation between the location, the culture you are involving in the movies, and the general background. I think I read somewhere that the first intention was to choose a set in the United Kingdom. I don't know if it's true.
No.
So anyway, this choice, it's not so simple, I mean, so evident, because you are from Czech Republic, but the Polish background is also involved. So my question is to understand your cultural root, how they are related in this story, in this movie, and if you feel something personal relate with your background, your cultural background in these choices you have made about.
Well, I've become friendly with the Poles in last couple of years, but it was actually the energy came from Poland, because I had a film released there in the year 2000. It was called Loners. I just wrote the film. It was directed by Dawid Onziczek, but it was a major hit in Poland. And then one of my stage plays were actually produced in Poland many times. It was So they started inviting me there, and then these invitations sort of build up, you know. And they said the situation was very good for me to do anything in Poland, you know. So I thought, well, I'd try to test it, and they were right, you know.
At the beginning of the movie, there is also a dialogue between the actors, and they are speaking about the interaction between the Western culture and the Russian culture. So my question is also in this direction, how do you feel it? I mean, it's something at the very beginning of the movie, so I think it's not just a case, maybe. And so it's also about your relation with the this part of Europe and your feelings about.
Well, the lines at the beginning, they hint on the fact, why didn't we do it with the Russians, right? Because it's an obvious choice. It's Dostoevsky, Czech director. The obvious choice would be to do a Czech-Russian co-production. And instead we did a Czech-Polish co-production of a Russian classic, you know. But I think it's I'm not ready for Russian co-productions yet, you know. Their way of thinking is really very difficult for me to accept that, you know. It's a bit chaotic, and it's everything's built on friendship rather than professional attitude, and I have problems with that also, you know. So that relates to that Russian soul, or whatever they call it, you know, Russian specifics. You know. And but the describes the really existing documentary. I haven't seen the documentary they're talking about, but apparently it's a documentary by a guy called Pavel Pawlikowski, and he made a documentary about the grandson of Dostoevsky being a tram driver in St. Petersburg. So if you have a chance to watch it, it should be somewhere, because it was at some festivals back in the 90s. Watch it, because I still haven't watched it.
What's the relation between, if there is any, I think so, with your movie and the previous one? I mean, it's part of a trip, it's part of a personal street that you are following.
Well, the movie I've made before was this Wrong Side Up, and I thought it was a bit fake, or a bit unsincere movie, or it was based on my play. The play is okay, but the film I didn't like that much, you know. And one of the reasons why is that we tried to make some money by making that film. We had big ambitions, and it didn't work, you know. So this time I thought, well, no ambitions, you know, let's do what we like. Because you can do anything, you know. In Europe, when the cinema is sponsored, you don't have to care about the profit or the flop and success, it's all the same, you know. So I thought, yeah, let's be free, let's do what we like, and let's do projects that don't look very sexy, you know. And I can tell you at the beginning, it looks like a really bad film, because when you come to the people, you tell them, let's do a film based on a stage play, Dostoevsky, people just talking, basically, 100 pages of dialogue, you know. They say, it's not a good idea, but let's do it, you know. And eventually, it's quite an emotional film, you know, but I'm, it's really beautiful that I was able to do that, because it's not a very sexy project in terms of American banking, you know. And of course, there's a relation between this film and Year of the Devil, because in both cases, I take some real element and I build a story around it. At that time, it was the rock group being on a tour, and again, it was a real rock group, and I fictionalized their stories. And this time, it's a group of actors, but there's the relations between that, definitely.
Speaking about these previous experiences, it's spontaneous to ask, what's your idea of the cinema? What's the reason that push you toward a movie and toward directing a movie? But also, more in general, before we mention the relation between literature, theater, and films, and you told that for you it's the first is the literature, and then the theater, and then the movies. So I think this come out from the film we saw yesterday, because it's in my opinion, again, it's very complete. It's evident that there is a deep background behind about theater, about literature, about all the elements are deeply connected. So the first question was, what's your idea about the cinema? But the second question, the most important, it's, what's your idea about an artist? I don't know.
Well, cinema is partly culture, partly business, right? That's we have this problem in the Czech government. The politicians in Czech Republic think film is only business, you know. So that's why they don't support us. They say it's like a factory, right? There's nothing, there's no art in it, is there? You know, and it's half and half, you know. But with good literature, when you read a good book, you actually communicate with the writer, like brain to brain, you know, even if he's dead, makes no difference, you know. That's a straight communication between him and you, and that's fantastic, you know. In the film, the communication is difficult because there's a lot of technical obstacles in between you and the makers or the artists. And also, there's a couple of artists behind it, not just one. So you have sort of a collective mind of artists, and then you have the viewer, you know. And the communication is very difficult because it's translated by technical means. And well, artists in the film, I think they're the best artists in the film are the music composers, actually. I mean, if we talk about arts in film, some camera operators are true artists, you know, visual artists. Some of them are, because they can make a composition and they feel light and shades, you know, and the movement, just like some painters. And music composers, they're definitely artists. Other people with filmmaking, it's questionable, you know. Sometimes the writer is an artist, but that's it, you know. That's it. Directors are overestimated, actors are overestimated.
But so an artist, in your opinion, is...
Well, the artist in the divine sense, in the godly sense, is somebody who manages to capture the God's principles in the work of art. You know? So by watching his art or her art or hearing music or whatever, you can be in touch with something higher. You know? So I think the substance of art is it's got some godly substance, I think. And you a good artist can communicate with God for you, you know, just like a good priest, you know. If it's a bad priest or bad artist, they cannot communicate with God for you, but good artists and priests, they can, you know. So that's the, in general, this is the main reason for arts. And then it can make you irritated, or it can put you to peace, or it can make you cry or laugh, or whatever. But the main reason is to connect you with something on a higher level.
It's difficult to come back to another question after this question, but just to make the final point again, what is the reason that move you toward the project, and what are you interested in this moment? I mean, there are some topics that you follow, or every project is something new, is something just that come somehow. And
well, I've written a script about a very old director. You know, I was, for a couple of years, I was interested in old directors, like very old, like 90, you know, like Vidal and even older, you know. There are a couple of these directors around the world, you know, 90 plus years old. And it's a sort of a study of old people in general, but also a study of a person that's been all through the last century, you know. So it's history, this person, and capturing the history of the whole country for past 90 years, although he doesn't remember much, you know. So that's a story I've written now, you know. It's a story of an old director who for various reasons, somebody wants him to direct the next film, although they hope he's gonna die in the meantime. And he doesn't die. He does, but only after that. You know. He doesn't, and he makes a crew of very old people, people he used to work with in the 50s. You know. So that's it's a bunch of really, really very old people, you know, moving on wheelchairs and having all these technical gadgets, you know, and without voices or artificial eyes or whatever, and the hard of hearing and all that. But there's something powerful in them, you know. So that's the story, you know.
You're charmed somehow by the past,
also
by.
Not really, but I thought there's a. By watching the old people, I think there's a certain point where a person stops being a human being and starts to be something else. You know? Like very old people to me, they seem like not people anymore. You know, they're different species, I would say. Not worse or better, simply different. Because when you're sometimes it comes when you're 86, or sometimes it comes earlier or later, but you simply switch off to a different regime, and you start working on different batteries, you know. And of course things have totally different importance for you, you know, when you're 95, you know. So I'm also fascinated by what is important and what is not for these people, you know. And of course you are surrounded by people that know much more about you than yourself, because you losing your memory, you know. So other people are telling you what you've been through, what was your past, you know.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.